Chapter 5. The Empty House. As soon as everyone grabs a snack and a drink, we settle in and await the next story. I spend a few moments with your great Uncle John and great Aunt Betty as others mill around, enjoying the treehouse. Time for another story. As I pulled my car to a stop next to a dogwood tree, I surveyed the simple dwelling, a small Cape Cod, with a front porch that spanned the entire width of the front of the house. A small chicken coop was visible around the back. The tin roof was showing her age. Gone was any of the beauty that once graced this simple dwelling. Her shutters hung at a precarious angle. The once strong hinges were no longer able to hold onto the rotting wood. Before long, they would not be able to hold on due to their own weight. The glass window panes that once protected against winter's chill and summer storms were cracked and broken. The bare wood sat unprotected against the continuous passing of time. These windows to the world that once witnessed the laughter and the tears of the family they called this dwelling home, the windows were now sightless. Although the property was still in his name, the last members of the Parker family had not visited here in many years. The sun was hanging low in the western sky as I stepped away from my car and approached the long abandoned house. My shadow had already reached the weathered board and batten wall before my boot touched the bottom step. I paused before taking another step. The front door was half open. My eyes and my heart slowly surveyed the empty shack that had once served as their home and place of refuge. All that is seen, with enough time, will eventually be erased. As water can transform a landscape, one grain of sand after another, each minute takes something with it as it runs through the hourglass of life. Such was the case here before me. This house and the family that had called it home had already had their day in the sun. Except for the youngest son, Calvin, the Parker family rested down the road of peace in the family plot behind Oakwood Community Church. As my boot touched the second step, my mind recalled the story that Calvin had shared during my interview. Calvin recently celebrated his 94th birthday. His parents had passed away more than 3 decades before. His brothers and sisters had all taken their last breath over the past 15 years. Knowing his time was near, Calvin desired to share his story with those who would listen. Standing on the front steps of what had once been the Parker family home, tears formed in my eyes as I remembered Calvin's story. For a brief moment, I thought I heard sounds from just beyond the doorway before me. The children ran to the front door to welcome their father home. The time was well past 8 o'clock. John had left home before dawn for his job as a construction worker. Even though the hour was late, his wife had prepared dinner while his children had been busy doing schoolwork and chores until his arrival. After giving his wife Sylvia a warm embracing kiss, he in turn gave each of his children a big hug and kiss. After this ritual-like homecoming, John Parker walked to the small porch on the back side of their home. There, he drew water to wash his hands before going to the table to enjoy an evening meal with his family. After giving thanks to the king, each took a portion of the fried chicken, mashed potatoes, string beans, and homemade biscuits as they were passed around the table. After John's wife shared the events of her day, John inquired of his children as to how their day at school had been. When it came to Calvin's turn, he simply stared at his plate as a single tear ran down his cheek. Although not an educated man by human standards, John Parker possessed wisdom. He had spent his entire adult life building a strong relationship with Prince Shai. John's education and his wisdom were rich and deep. Although Calvin did not speak of the matter directly while at the dinner table, John knew what was troubling his son. Kalen, there are three general laws that reside in the world of Adamov. First, we have the ultimate law, which is the law of the king found in the war manual. Secondly, in the land of Adamov, there exists civil law, rules by which men attempt to govern themselves. In many cases, these laws are good and right. When justly applied to all, they add a sense of peace and security to the land. There's also a third layer of law that often has the greatest influence upon men and women. This third layer of law is covertly hidden within the cultural values of a people group and overtly expressed by their worldview. For simplicity, we'll refer to it as the cultural law. Often, cultural law is crafted by the devious and divisive Lord Reason. Although light bearers are to be living according to the ultimate law, more often than not, cultural law influences the light bearers who fail to fan their flames. Cultural law at times separates humans from each other. It's if one group feels that they are superior to another group. For something as simple as one's income, or the shade of the outer layer of skin, or even the meaning of the ultimate law, then Lord Reason has succeeded in enforcing his cultural laws. When Lord Reason can influence the thinking of unwitting light bearers, then the results can be most devastating. You see, light bearers are to influence the moral fiber of a society to make it better. When light bearers succumb to cultural law, then much evil is released in the land of Adamov. This action grieves protectors when the ones they are assigned to protect openly bring pain upon innocent victims in each other. You see, protectors protect light bearers from the henchmen of Lord Reason, not from one another. John Parker sought to show his family how to live by the ultimate law, the law of the king. Yet, in the small town where his family lived, cultural law trumped over even the civil law and the ultimate law. After the family dinner, all helped to clean the dishes. Soon, the home became quiet as each one settled in for the night. After the others were in bed, John Parker walked into his son's bedroom. John casually sat on the foot of the bed and rested his back against the footboard. Calvin had just settled into bed for the night when his father and friend walked into his room. Calvin knew what was on his father's mind. The incident at the dinner table was the unspoken issue that required his father to forego going to bed himself in order to be with his son at this time. Calvin pulled himself up in one arm as he faced his wisest friend and advisor, his father. With only the prompting of his father's hand being placed lovingly upon Calvin's foot, Calvin began to recount the events that so troubled his mind and heart. More as a rhetorical question, Calvin asked, "Dad, why do they treat us like they do? They act as if we're not even human." After a long pause, without his father making any sound, Calvin continued, "It was the same guys again. They called me names as they tried to make me angry. It was clear that they wanted to pick a fight with me. With three of them and only one of me, they were acting real tough. They said all kinds of things, trying to get a response out of me. I was doing okay, like you told me to do. Then they said something that really hurt. Their words pierced my heart like a dagger. They said that the king only loves their kind, those with a lighter skin color. They said there was no use for folks like us to even try to get to know King Avi or Prince Shai, because it was only a waste of time. Calvin sat silently as he replayed the day's event in his mind. Calvin's father just stared at his son, briefly. John's anger caused his face to turn red and his right hand tighten into a hard fist. How many times had he too witnessed and been exposed to this kind of blind, ignorant arrogance? When would the king finally say, "Enough is enough"? John, being led by the king, allowed his presence to calm his powerful desire to take this matter into his own hands and bring swift justice to the three boys who had so taunted and hurt his son. Sitting in silence in the dimly lit room, it took a few moments before John was calm enough to address this matter with his son. Now, walking in the full strength of the king's authority, John moved closer to his son. He placed his large, calloused hand upon his son's shoulder with the grace and authority that only comes from the king's throne. John calmly said to Calvin, "Look at me, Calvin." Sheepishly, Calvin met his father's eyes. As he stared into the eyes of the one man he completely trusted, he heard these words. "Prince Shai has told us that in the land of Adama, we will have problems and challenges. Events like what you experienced today is an example of what Prince Shai was talking about. It was he who gave you the strength to not react to the words that cut into you so deeply. It was his protector, your protector, that kept you safe from any physical harm." Now, Calvin, listen closely to what I'm saying to you. You are not defined by what men say about you. You, my son, are defined by your relationship with Prince Shai and King Avi. Neither any man who walks in the land of Adama or any of the henchmen of Lord Regent can change that. Son, you have been given a great opportunity here. These three boys meant to harm you with their words today. Apparently, they do not yet know Prince Shai. Calvin, the light of King Avi needs to be revealed to them, the light that is in you. The light that Prince Shai gave you is what these boys need to see. When you go to school tomorrow, do not follow the natural thoughts that may come when you see one of them. Be careful to not let your emotions influence your actions either. What the king will have you do may not make any sense at the time. That is usually how he does things. Calvin, these boys are not your enemies. Lord Reason is your enemy. These boys are blind and confused. The light in you will drive away the darkness in them so that they can see clearly. Greater is he that is you than all of Lord Reason's servants. Beginning tomorrow, Calvin, you're going to kick some serious butt, not with your fist, but with the light that is in you. Now, go to sleep. Ask the king to direct your steps tomorrow. Thanks, Dad. I know that you're right. I do feel better. John kissed his son goodnight and closed the door to his bedroom door as he left. Just before going to bed, John walked outside for some fresh air and to talk with the king about this matter. Calen, Calvin's father had learned long ago that the only weapon that light bearers have is the king's light within them. He had learned that the human desire for revenge is powerful and seemingly justifiable, humanly speaking. Revenge, although it may be sweet for the moment, will soon turn to gravel in one's mouth. Calvin knew that what his son had to do. He had to be like Prince Shai. He had to have the confidence that pleasing the king was more important than any momentary pleasure, revenge, or otherwise. As a storyteller, I know that it was not easy. Calvin followed his father's advice. By the end of the school year, These three boys became Calvin's best friends. You see, as Calvin followed the king's leading, the light in Calvin became too bright for the darkness in these boys. Although it took several months, each one was visited by Prince Shai. One by one, each boy became a friend of the king's son. No longer would these boys be enslaved to Lord Reason. The sun was below the tree line when I finally walked away from the homestead of the Parker family. Although this empty house would one day fall to the ground, what was accomplished through the family members would never fade away. Calvin's three friends will forever remain in the king's presence. End of chapter 5.